Hello, everyone. Welcome.
I'm about to turn 50 on Sunday, and I feel like there's so many other topics that I want to learn and places I want to travel to that I could even go another 50 years, and it's probably 100 years from now, if I can ever live that long, I would have the feeling that there's still more to learn. And just back to your point on levitation, yeah, if your listeners want to go to YouTube, you can look up scientists levitating frogs, little marbles, other weighted objects. I think it goes as big as a bowling ball. So basically, what you're doing is you're matching the frequency, and sometimes you're getting magnetic rotational devices to spin, and that will lessen the gravity load until
Beautiful.
the point where objects can be rendered weightless. And this is also one of the key points to understand how UFOs fly. In fact, they're not very unidentified when you start to realize that that the roundness is from two counter-rotating magnetic fields, which can basically render the occupants and the ship in the middle weightless. And basically what it does is creates its own gravity field around the ship so that it's always falling into the space it creates. Even when it's going straight up, it's falling straight up. I know it's a bit to wrap your head around, but it's quite logical when you can un if you can understand that gravity can very much be manipulated, and there are two types of gravity that have been discovered, and the gravity here on Earth is very set in stone. It's gravity one, where out in space is gravity zero. On the moon, it's about half that, and other planets, depending on how big or heavy they are, have different gravity fields.
And these are things that we're looking into. I reckon, obviously this has been looked into for years through, black ops or government. And, it keeps on coming back to the same sort of thing. And it's funny that you've said two types of gravity, and then you've got Bob Lazar that would say gravity A and gravity B, which is local
Right.
gravity, and then external, gravity out there. So also with the technology you're talking about with the metal, like you'd have metal beams spinning, whatever, clockwise, anti-clockwise, going opposite to each other, creating this field, and it's basically going within itself. So this is stuff that obviously you're looking into a lot of fields at the moment in terms of technology-wise. What are some of the other things that you've sort of that has grabbed your attention in later years now? Like, have you looked into anything with the U.S. military or secret space government? There's so much going on at the moment. We hear about Jade
So much
Helm
going
as well, and
on. Yeah.
everything's going on.
Well, yeah. And what's so interesting and how sacred places parallels over to the esoteric subjects is a lot of times I'll go back to Mount Shasta, and here's my map of California behind me. And these are all the geothermal features in the state of California. And Mount Shasta is right up there in about the center. And of course, it's a dormant volcano, and there's a heat vent on top. And for this and many other reasons, Native Americans held this mountain sacred for many, many years. Well, there's also rumors of an underground city there called Telos, Telos, and a mythical figure named Phylos, who sometimes pops up and greets the hikers of Mount Shasta. Not me when I did it in 97. But I was open to the experience. I would have taken a tour of Talos. But how this ties into the military, sure enough, great big military base right on the side of the high plateau of Mount Shasta. So the more paranormal a place is, the better probability there's going to be some kind of military presence. Or in the case of Skinwalker Ranch, which is the most paranormal place in North America,
Definitely.
is owned by Bigelow, who is the head of Bigelow Aerospace, and their logo is a gray alien, like the Schwab diamond or almond-shaped eyes and big head. And you can't go on to the Skinwalker Ranch, but again, how it ties into sacred places, the Native Americans have known about this location for centuries, and they didn't ever want to go on that land, and pretty much avoided it like the plague.
And you know that is very interesting that Bigelow picked that up. I know that Christopher O'Brien, I don't know him personally, but he sort of came across that first, and then later on you got Nids working there, and then George Knapp and all these other people getting on there, and Bigelow had the money to get it, and the amount of activity in that area, and even going back like you said with the Native Americans reporting on this area, it seems to just have a lot of stuff going on. Has there been other spots in America that have sort of got your attention similar to the Skinwalker Ranch and the other, like, the mountains? Like, even we're up at James Gilliland's ranch and Mount Adams. We saw a film stuff going in and out of the friggin' mountain and crafts down low over the trees. Multiple witnesses there, and we're getting on cameras at different times. There seems to be hot spots a lot over America, and I was surprised when I went there just how big everything is, like the mountains as well and the plants.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know Chris O'Brien personally. He lives across the street from David Hatcher Childress, and he's another good friend of mine, and they're both on Ancient Aliens quite regularly, and we've had late night talks over a few drinks on many occasions. And Chris, of course, does the books about the animal
stalking the herd and
all that
stalking
stuff.
The trickster, and
he wasn't happy at all the way that the producers of Ancient Aliens put together the Skinwalker Ranch episode. It kind of made him look like he was chicken to go in there. It's like, oh, it wasn't at all. They just made it look that way because they had to create this kind of drama. And he'll tell you a lot of things about the animal mutilation phenomenon, cattle mutilations, and so forth. And your question about are there other places? Well, yeah, and one of those is the San Luis Valley, which is the largest alpine valley in the world. It's mostly in Colorado, southern Colorado, but it's partly in New Mexico. And this is where the cattle mutilation phenomenon began. It actually started with a horse, Snippy the horse, in 1966. And then thousands of animals since then, mysteriously slaughtered. Now, it would be easy to just dismiss them and say satanic cult or pranksters just killing animals because they love to kill animals, but that doesn't explain the fact that many parts of the animal have been surgically butchered with very precise laser instruments, which take their eyes out, which take their rectum out, which remove their sexual organs, which remove their white blood cells. Now, how could and why would a satanic ritual or pranksters be concerned about this, or grafting skin off of the animals? And then the other thing that's very strange about the cattle mutilations is many of them, if they're found in the winter, no footprints, no animal tracks, just a body that falls to the earth and broken branches underneath it in cases, suggesting that it's been dropped from above.
I watched some, sorry for cutting you off, but I watched Christopher O'Brien lately do a few presentations, and even some of the friggin' cows landing on power poles and trees right up, and they're just left there.
Yeah.
That's stuff I heard about, but until I saw it with these pictures, I was pretty taken aback by it.
Right. Well, Chris and I have a divergence in opinion on who's up to this. He says it's all very much human related, and it's black helicopters are seen, and that's true. But keep in mind, black helicopters are seen when crop circles appear.
And UFOs too.
Black helicopters chase UFOs. That's right. So this is part of the paranormal enigma, if you may. And I think it goes one step further, and this is where Chris draws the line with me, and that is there is an extraterrestrial element involved, and there's also a biotech of a standard that's much, much higher than anything we can imagine. But we have cloned Dolly the sheep 2 decades ago. We're on the verge of cloning humans. So this really shouldn't come as a big surprise that humans and animals have been part of a malevolent ET cloning experiment. And the place this is happening is this underground base at Dulce, New Mexico, to stay in the Southwest. I mean, this is where a lot of phenomenon in North America occurs because this is where their base is. And it goes down a mile deep, at least 9 different levels. humans can only go to two or three. There was a war fought there with some special ops in the 1970s. I describe it all in my book, Future Esoteric, in the Underground Bases chapter. I also have a chapter on the cattle mutilations and the human abductions. And this is where you tie in the genetic manipulations. And keep in mind that in the event of an extreme emergency, if you or I were about to die of loss of blood, we could substitute cow's blood in our bodies and live. So there are some parallels with some of the more advanced mammals and humans on this planet that have some kind of parallel crossover that could then be used in some of these grisly experiments that are said to be done in Dulce, New Mexico.
What do you think some of the underlying reasons for these, like we can go into like, and you just mentioned basically how similar humans and the cows are for examples. What do you think's underlying some of the apparent experiments going on in Dulce with, humans and animals and aliens? We hear about, there's meant to be three factions there and, some of the sources of, I have spoken to and some I haven't too. So, some of the old school ones, we just don't know because, then some of them aren't with us anymore. We hear about Phil Snyder as well, who's no longer with us and other people. But there's some sources I've spoken to that I find to be credible, but there's, it seems that there's it's multi-layered because obviously the ETs would have an agenda and then the humans would have an agenda and the only thing that wouldn't have agenda down there is the friggin' animals because they're the ones that are getting whatever done to them. So, this is where there's got to be some, things there. Have you pondered on these at all? The as thoughts?
Of course, of course. And this is where I have to begin my examination in Future Esoteric, is that what we come across are two groups of ETs that have two divergent agendas. And just to simplify, it's easy to think of the benevolent ETs who do want to see us progress, who do want to see us reach a golden age, as service to others. And they're here to help us help ourselves to reach us. They're not going to come down and be our babysitters. They're not going to do our dirty work. We need to do that. But they will help us with the malevolent ETs, which have been here for thousands of years, mostly underground and out of sight. And those are service to self. And what they've been doing to us and to animals and sometimes to each other is very much what they want to do to advance their agenda. And their agenda is to stay in a position of power. And they basically look at humans as livestock, much in the same way that we would look at a feedlot. They have contempt for us and they really don't care what we think. They kind of view us as lesser animals in the same way that we might view sheep or pigs or cows. So this is what, in my opinion, I feel like the benevolent ETs would like humans to start to grasp. And that is that we do live, first of all, in a multiverse, which has many holographic properties. And we could talk about that because it's pretty mind-blowing. But for us to wake up to the fact that there is this external threat that we've have been dealing with and are continuing to deal with, and there does seem to be a sort of crescendo moment coming, which could be as soon as this September. And that is why we all need to be as aware as we possibly can, to be open-minded. I know a lot of things that I might be saying could be out there and sound crazy, but I'm just saying keep an open mind to this because if we do indeed live in a multiverse, we're living within 13 dimensions. We're living in a universe that is highly populated with sentient beings of all walks of life. And as strange as these blue avians I've been hearing David Wilcock talk about and his new whistleblower in the secret space program, to these 9-foot-tall reptilian creatures that live underground and consider themselves of Earth because they have been born here and they live here and they do their operations here. But the fact that they don't make themselves known to us makes it a hidden agenda, makes it an esoteric subject. And that's pretty much what I'm into these days.
Well, going into the word esoteric, it basically, you know, means knowledge for a select few or those who are willing to study it or learn it, teach it. And you go into, you know, from modern to future esoteric, which means, you know, it's going to be a new way with all this. Now, you mentioned, you know, basically we're going into the holographic universe type thing here. What's some of the stuff you've come into and what's your take on the holographic, you know, side of things with the multiverse?
Great question. And it's complicated, but I always like to give as simplistic of an answer as I can while still being accurate. And what it's basically coming down to is that we are all beings of light. And this light is also connected to our soul or our spirit. And when a human body dies, the moment upon death, just very, very small loss of weight. So there is something tangible inside of us that transcends when the body dies. Going on this and going on the examination of reincarnation, which is a chapter in modern esoteric. I grew up an atheist. I had no skin in any game in religion, as far as that goes. I just piece things together as I travel around the world, as I talk to people, as I learned in life, as I read books. And I do believe that there is ample evidence to suggest that we are all spirits. We've all been here before. We all have memories of being here before. We have memories with other people. We never recall it, but that doesn't make them go away. The true sign of a seeker is one who will follow, and this is a journalistic adage too, you'll follow a story as far as it goes. Follow the money, they say, in journalism if you can't make sense of a story. But in the case of some of these esoteric questions about who we are and our place in this universe, follow the spirit. And the spirit will tell you that we do live in this holographic universe. And in this holographic universe, what you see and even what you feel may not be real. So for example, I have this pillow here. It looks very real. I can make sounds with it. I can push it around. But if we were to put it under a microscope and look at it at the atomic level, we'll see that it's mostly empty space. Yeah. Right. And this is where we're going with quantum physics, that the deeper down the rabbit hole we go, the deeper we look at things into their atomic and even subatomic levels, we find the abyss staring right back at us. And we find even subatomic particles with consciousness. So this is where the whole thing is going with these holographic universe theories, is that we're just like these light marionettes doing our little dance. But the thing is, we have free will. And this is what makes us so terribly interesting to extraterrestrials, is that we can do such wonderful, great, benevolent things like lead India to freedom as Gandhi did through nonviolence. Or we can develop a nuclear bomb and blow up half the planet or take the planet down with us. I don't think the benevolent ETs are going to allow that to happen. I don't think we're going to see mass death of this planet, because they do want to see us reach the golden age. But we will see a lot of pain and suffering before we get there, unfortunately. But it's almost like the analogy that the darkest hour is just before dawn. And in many ways, our free will is being tested. Can we stay positive? Can we be true to our goals? Can we stay nonviolent in light of so much negativity being poured down on us, so much pressure financially and all the different ways that people are being stressed out these days? Can we still do it? Can we still be positive through it all? And I'm good friends with Greg Prescott, who does the N5D esoteric website. And he just came out with an article about staying positive and the fact that we may be entering this age of, I'm not sure if it's the photon belt, but some kind of light from the center of the universe is meant to start coming here as soon as September. September is just this incredible date when so many things appear to be happening, especially here in North America, because we have the Pope coming to visit for the very first time, speaking in front of the UN General Assembly, speaking to the President, speaking to Congress, and we have the BRICS Bank going online, which is introducing a new currency based on gold, which no fiat currency can stand up against. You have our Federal Reserve saying that we're supposed to have a rate hike, which will send the market into the tizzy. And only just today, China had a huge collapse. And I would like to remind your viewers that the last time China had a big collapse, 2 or 3 months later, the U.S. had their collapse in 2008. So for me, the writing is on the wall. I'm getting prepared. I'm ready to sit this one out. I have a group of friends around me that I can trust and rely on, and hopefully supplies, and it doesn't get too bad here, but who knows? I just renewed my passport, so I might be flying out to hang out with you in Australia.
Yeah, well, who knows? Welcome anytime. And this is where it comes down to choose your reality time. And I agree, there's something going on, especially we look at the dates, and something that I've learned through my experiences and in time, whether it's through, you know, what's going on socially or even individually, if we look at things in where we are in galactic plane, where we look at things planetary, there are energetic things that affect us. And yes, we're going into this more high-powered photon area. On top of that, with, you know, things supposedly that's going to happen in September and things like that, now's the time more than ever to look within ourselves and go, you know, the fear side of things is a human trait, and it's good to actually have because it helps us in some ways. But the fear of, you know, everything going to hell and it's going to, you know, this is going to be it, we've got to realize that there's going to be some of that come with it. But with that, is that's the focus for us to go, all right, there's change going on. This is how we know there's change. And I find humans get more scared. And I've been through this when we're in the phase of the unknown. You're going from one state to another state. And when you're topsy-turvy and you don't know whether to fall back or go forward, you don't know what's going on, the human trait emotionally is fear. So this is where we've just got to go back within, and we've got to go, you know, where do we want to go with all this? Because, you know, what we're doing hasn't worked for thousands of years because of, you know, either slavery or, you know, people being poor. You know, there's so many things we could go into with this. So I'm glad you brought up these things because these are signs that things are going on right now. With yourself, what do you think of, you know, keep on hearing about this Jade Helm, and when I've done some research into it, I found different things, but basically I found, from what I understand, is that there's meant to be a Jade 2 computer program, and it's held at the helm. And when I was looking up on this and listening about this, it was almost like a Terminator 2 scenario where there was a technology that was able to surveillance things and maybe make decisions on its own. And I've talked about artificial intelligence on here before, that I know that it is out there on a different level. And I know that we can break through it because, you know, there's ways we can get into this program in the body computer to have this existence. But being an American, being somebody there, what are you getting on Jade Helm at the moment?
Well, there was a lot of reporting before it started, and even some reporting day one and day two. It's been a media blackout. And I'm tied in with some of the biggest whistleblower types in this country. And I'll just show you on my map right here. This is Southern California. This is where it's happening, right along the Mexican border here. And it's in my state, and I don't hear anything about it. I get a lot of celebrity gossip news. I get Dancing with the Star results, but nothing on Jade Helm. What's so terribly interesting about Jade Helm and where it basically crosses the line is we have a law here in USA called posse comitatus, and that is the military is not allowed to do their exercises in civilian population area. But that's exactly what they're doing with Jade Helm 15. And I really have not heard anything since the 15th or 16th. We've had a couple of these other lone wolf shootings once again, which probably are false flags to get people upset about guns and give them an excuse to outlaw the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. I'm not sure if that's going to work, but what's so terribly interesting about Jade Helm is they are meant to be doing here's that word again, holographic simulations of battlefields. Holograms are becoming so advanced that Tupac Shakur and Michael Jackson have now appeared on stage again and have performed, and they look absolutely realistic. So you can bring people back to life. You can create mock battlefield scenarios. And if you're going to go one step further with Project Bluebeam, which has been known about for decades, anytime the word blue is in the word, it's a project that involves extraterrestrials. Project Bluebeam would be a holographic simulation of an alien attack, much like our Hollywood movies portray year after year. Blowing up LA, blowing up the Golden Gate Bridge, blowing up the White House. And if we were to start seeing ships in the sky, as much as many of us would be delighted by that prospect, my first reaction might be, is it a hologram? And we have to be very, very clear that this is a program that has been in the works for a long time. And even the great Wernher von Braun, who was a Nazi scientist, came over here with Project Paperclip, told his assistant that this would be the final step to simulate an alien attack, and that would bring in the full brunt of the New World Order and global government, and even a one world religion. And I mentioned the Pope coming here in September. Well, I just published a book by an Italian author named Leo Lionzagami called Pope Francis, the Last Pope, Money, Masons, and Occultism in the Decline of the Catholic Church. And in this book, which I highly recommend your viewers to read, he outlines the steps that are being taken, undertaken right now towards a one world government led by the Pope. And that's why they're doing these interfaith meetings. That's why the Pope is having Muslim clerics at the Vatican who kneel down and face Mecca and pray. It's never been done before in history, but it's happening now. It's why there's a giant city in Kazakhstan called Astana, which is a religious city with pyramids and obelisks and symbols and hieroglyphics. CNN called it the weirdest city in the world because of all these things. And this is where the one world government's going to be based. So these things are happening right now, right before our eyes. It's hard to get the kind of information, especially if you're still using television or newspapers or mass media to inform you of the way of the world's. But I think with the advent of the internet, the new Gutenberg press, and the freedom exchange of information, that we are able to put a lot of this stuff together, as well as boots on the ground, people that are researching these stories, like Leo Zagami, who lives in Rome with a unique view just right over the walls of the Vatican, picking up stories that we never get in the West. Pedophile scandals in Rome with high-ranking Vatican officials. Big, big story in Rome because the police come down on them. They catch you guys. You see them doing the perp walk. But we don't hear that. We just hear the little rosy PR colored stories about how great he is and how he wants to equalize money. And of course, who wouldn't disagree with that? But there's more to it. And there was a researcher that Leo features in the Last Pope book named Verbitsky, and he's from Argentina, where the first Jesuit Pope in history, remember, the Jesuits were outlawed by the church up to 200 years ago. They were enemies of the Catholic Church. Now they're being led by their enemy. Okay, so that should give you a hint. Well, Verbitsky said, beware of this Pope Francis. He's a very good actor. And I think all politicians on the world stage are also very good actors.
So where do you see all this sort of stuff? If we take that, we take September, we take Jade Helm, we take a lot of these different scenarios and we look at what's happened in history before, have you sort of got like a sort of a overall sort of idea? Not that anyone knows what's going on, but, you know, what's your thoughts on where we're going at the moment with all these?
Well, we're walking on the edge of a razor, is where what I see is, and on one side of the razor, we can maybe not go to World War III. Would be great. Yeah, save the planet, save all of us. What a concept. And then eventually reach a golden age when free technology. I have a chapter in Future Esoteric. The final section is called Utopia, and this is where we could go into the golden age. We could come up with some ideas to end money as we know it. We could release free energy technology, start using desalinization plants, and this drought here in California would just go away in a snap of a finger. We could start making deserts of the world arid again and really make this a paradise planet where justice and truth are the prevailing thoughts. And then, and only then, do I think we would be in a position to reach out as a collective humanity to our space brothers and sisters and maybe make some kind of meaningful connection. Or walking on this edge of a razor, we could go into timeline two, which is destruction of the planet, world war starting in the Middle East, and really enveloping the rest of the world, massive amounts of suffering, not only human suffering, but animal suffering, which is ongoing at this point. Genocide, really, in some animal species. We're just seeing most of the large mammals of Africa just pretty much gone, on the verge of extinction in many cases. So we need to wake up. And the benevolent ETs are so far advanced of us. They look at us, we're like the planet of the apes to them. We're very unevolved. We still hurt each other. We can't bring everybody up. We don't even care about most of the people of the world, don't care about the suffering of animals and people. And this is just not acceptable if we are going to make this kind of meaningful contact. We have to make strides to correct this if we're ever going to be the advanced species of humans that was projected, say, in the classic TV series Star Trek. And I can tell you a few things about that. Here in California is where the producer and writer of the Star Trek TV series, Gene Roddenberry, lived. And he was sitting in on some seances with, I think it was a Council of Seven, mystic people who could have contact with humans from our future, from 400 years from now, which is about when Star Trek takes place. And it's interesting to note that in no Star Trek episode do you ever see them exchanging money. It's the end of money 400 years from now. And they're on a benevolent, peaceful mission to just go and observe, to just trek the stars and see what other kind of sentient life is out there. And in that process, they have what's known as the Prime Directive. They're not allowed to interfere with any developing civilization. And that's also true with the benevolent ETs in the world today, that they are not allowed to directly land on the White House lawn and declare they're here and say, you're going to do things our way. They're far more subtle, and they're very, very mindful of the karmic implications that would come from this sort of disclosure. So I think disclosure will come in a much more subtle way, in the kind of subtle ways that we've been seeing, sightings here and there, different kind of contacts, whether it be psychic or even physical. And humans are kind of like the 100th monkey. You know, we're going to have this light bulb moment collectively, and when it does, we're all just going to get it. And it's going to be a beautiful moment, and it'll be so profound. It'll be the time when we start as an advanced species. And maybe even the calendar will even be year zero, because it'll be
Reset.
so incredibly amazing to move forward with this kind of knowledge. A reset, yeah. And I'm all for it. I can't wait to see it.
Oh, so am I. Well, I think we're all for it. I think we're all realizing what's going on hasn't worked for us as a whole. So I think everyone's up for anything but what's going on, except for the select few in the 1%, as some call it. But Have you had any UFO sightings or any experiences yourself during your journeys, during your life?
Yeah, sure have. This is how I start my preface to Future Esoteric called Author's Karma Statement. And it so happens that there was a UFO sighting over the Midwest, mass UFO sightings. And I found it in my friend's history book in Chronicle of the 20th Century. And then the day I was born, exactly 50 years ago, in 3 days, in 5 states, massive UFO sightings. Well, I don't remember that at all, but I thought it was pretty funny that that happened. But what did happen to me is in 1997, I was backpacking up through the Pacific Northwest. I was with a bunch of guys, and we were at Crater Lake, which is close to the California border. And you could see Mount Shasta in the background. We were up there getting ready to set up our camp at the highest point on Crater Lake, which is not a campsite. We were just commando crashing there. And we're just getting up from smoking one of those, although didn't really have any effect on what we saw, because we all saw it and we all confirmed we saw it, which was a bright streaking light, like a laser beam white light going right to the depths of the lake. And we just fell to the ground laughing. It was just so incredible. Everybody saw exactly the same thing. We talked about it all night, kept talking about it. And we were running up the hill to catch a couple of the other guys who may not have seen it to see if they saw it. And just by chance, all three of us looked to the south, and on Mount Shasta, the exact same thing happened. And it occurred for about 5 to 10 seconds. Just this white light, and it just kind of broke away into little square blips and then just went invisible right into the mountain. And I only learned later that most of the UFO sightings that occur worldwide happen near volcanoes. So it may be that they're able to withstand the heat and go into these magma chambers and maybe have a safe place to be, away from prying eyes and mischievous militaries that would wish to harass them. Because down in Mexico, for example, just outside of Mexico City, I know I'm gonna butcher the name, but it's like Popocatépetl volcano. Millions of people have seen phenomenon coming and going from this volcano. Millions, including the giant cigar ships. There's even a video of it. All kinds of lights, all kinds of craft coming and going from a volcano. So, and just wrap your head around that. But my sightings also occurred with two volcanoes.
Amazing. Yeah, and they do seem to be around, those areas, and even ancient sites. There's, there are correlations with where a lot of hot spots are. So, no, that's fascinating. Thank you for sharing that. Is there anything else you'd like to go into before we wrap up the show? Anything you'd like to let viewers know? I'm gonna have the descriptions to your book publishing site and also your own website, so people can go straight to check your more of your stuff out. But is there anything else you'd like to cover just before we wrap it up?
Well, sure. Just if you want to learn more about me, Brad Olsen, OLSEN.com is my website. I'm also the event producer of a huge street fair here in San Francisco called the How Weird Street Fair. And I have the opportunity to design all the posters and maybe catch you a glimpse down my hallway, all the posters there on the wall. And every one of them has an alien or a UFO in it. So we try to do some subtle programming on our end. But as you mentioned, CCC Publishing is the website where people can go to see the books. And I set my books at 100% readership. Leo doesn't want his books to be fully accessible, but I believe that people should have the opportunity to read something before they buy it if they want to buy it, or if they're broke, you can just read it off the website. That's fine
Awesome.
by me.
So people can
One of
just go
this
and check it out and do what they can.
Do what they can,
Yeah.
yeah. You get an ebook and it'll go to you anywhere. It's a little bit expensive to ship to Australia, as you can imagine. But if they come out of my office through the CCC Publishing website, then I'm able to sign copies for people, and I'm happy to do that. And let's see, you could see some of my videos on Esoteric Series on YouTube. Follow me on Facebook. I have Esoteric Book Series is my page, where I'll post all the pertinent information around these books, and then a Sacred Places 108 Destination Books page on Facebook as well, where I put up new archaeological finds and things that support these books.
Fantastic. Well, I'm sure the viewers and listeners have enjoyed this episode. I have. And thank you so much for taking the time to do so. It'll be good to keep in touch.
Absolutely, Peter. That was great talking to you. I can't believe an hour went by so quick.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right, mate. Well, take care and thanks again. We'll wrap it up there. Cheers, mate.
Good on you. Take care, man.